F off, F to F off, back to Russia, to Russia, back to Russia, F off, back to Russia.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Lenore with your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Asthma affects 25 million people nationwide, and every day 10 people die with it, with African American women and children being most at risk. Early warning signs include coughing, especially at night, or with exercise and wheezing. Almost all asthma can be effectively managed with a good action plan. So talk with your doctor today. And for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
I'm Ella Harp, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. When I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me. Stars fading, but I linger on, dear. Still craving your kiss. I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just saying this. Sweet dreams till sunbeams find you. Sweet dreams that leave your worries behind you. And in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream.
Kisses, they put me in a spell. Go right to the bucket in my wishing well. They pull all those strings connected to my heart. They put me together and they take me all apart. Oh, those kisses, they take me for a spin. They never keep me outside, they always let me in. I love it when they come on by and tuck me tight in bed. I'll say a little chant to conjure up a kiss or two and spark a new romance. As soon as I blink, I then knock and at my door. I love those bag of tricks and they keep me wanting more. All I want is those magic kisses is all that I need. All I want is those magic kisses. Yeah.
do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? When the whole wide world seems oh so wrong and nothing you do seems very right, what do you do? Do you punch a bag? Do you pound some clay or some dough? Do you round up friends for a game of tag or see how fast you go? It's great to be able to stop when you plan the thing that's wrong and be able to do something else instead and think this song. I can stop when I want to, stop when I wish, can stop, stop, stop anytime. And what a good feeling to feel like this and know that the feeling is really mine. Know that there's something deep inside that helps us become what we can. For a girl can someday be a woman, and a boy can be someday a man. To stop when you plan a thing that's wrong and be able to do something else instead and think this song. I can stop when I want to, can stop when I wish, can stop, stop, stop anytime. What a good feeling to feel like this and know that the feeling is really mine. Know that there's something deep inside that helps us become what we can. For a girl can be someday a woman, and a boy can be someday a man. I know that there's something deep inside that helps us become what we can.
I'm more to me than what you see here. There's more behind these eyes. What these eyes have seen can't be unseen, dear. What these eyes have seen made me cry. I've seen my father die before me. I saw a brother do the same. Girl I loved died and left me hurting, and the world still turned the same. Don't know why I was left here to ponder why I ponder why. I know someday I'll find the answer, but not exactly how I would like. Some children never suffer, why some bastards never do. How many more wars before there's nothing? Why can't we find the final truth? Don't know why I was left here to ponder why I ponder why. I know someday I'll find the answer, why I ponder why I ponder why, to ponder why I ponder why. why. Why, I ponder why, I ponder why.
Blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. What force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Forever. prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines, built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving amidst the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. They have taken untold millions that they never toiled to earn, but without a brain and muscle, not a single wheel would turn. We'll break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. A power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of armies magnified a thousandfold. We'll bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, when the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us.
Pittsburgh. This is Eric Harrison coming to you with a heart full of gratitude on WRCT Pittsburgh. Rock on, Yinzers.
I'm the village idiot. I don't have anything to do with this pathetic little opera. I just felt like passing through.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we speak with constitutional scholar Steve Rohde about three significant Supreme Court decisions that are pending or just came down.
Are these cases an indication of the rapidly declining democracy in our country? Stay tuned. We also speak with Palestinian solidarity activist Felice Gelman about her new short video, The Right to Boycott.
The right to boycott is being challenged by the ultra-right forces in this country. So far, 37 states have passed laws against it.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm Maria Hall, Los Angeles civil rights lawyer. The U.S. Supreme Court, securely under the control of a supermajority of six conservative Republican justices, three of whom were appointed by Donald Trump, continues to play a decisive role in undermining our constitutional democracy. This ominous trend continues based on three recent key cases, which we'll be talking about today. In one, the court on March 4th rejected a lower court ruling that Trump was ineligible to run for president. In April, the court will hear oral arguments on Trump's claim of absolute immunity from criminal liability. And recently, the justices heard argument over whether social media sites had a right to ban Trump and others under their content moderation standards. All of these cases arise from the insurrection on January 6th, 2021, when a mob of thousands stormed the U.S. Capitol to prevent Joe Biden from being certified as president. That day, and for many months before and after, Donald Trump attempted to interfere with the constitutionally mandated process for the election of the President of the United States. Hanging in the balance of these three cases are some of the most momentous issues facing our democracy. Our guest on these important subjects is Stephen Rohde. Mr. Rohde is a noted constitutional scholar and activist. He is the past chair of the ACLU Foundation of Southern California, one of the founders and current chair of Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace, and the author of American Words of Freedom and of Freedom of Assembly. Steve Rohde is also a regular contributor to the Los Angeles Review of Books and to Truth Dig, and a leader in the national campaign to free the imprisoned investigative journalist Julian Assange. Steve Rohde, a warm welcome back to Law and Disorder.
It's such a pleasure to be with you, Maria and Michael. Thank you.
Last December, the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that under the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, Donald Trump was disqualified from running for re-election as President of the United States. Please explain what that court decided and its reasons for disqualifying Trump.
The Colorado Supreme Court, backed by plentiful law review articles from across the political spectrum, Republicans, Democrats, constitutional scholars, the court held that under the 14th Amendment, Donald Trump was disqualified. It was a historically grounded opinion. It was grounded in the text of the Constitution and the history of the Constitution. After the Civil War, which I now call the first American insurrection, Congress passed the 14th Amendment in the Reconstruction Amendments, as they are called. In the case of the 14th Amendment, in Section 3, they provided, that henceforth no person shall be an officer of the United States or hold any office under the U.S. or under any state who previously took an oath to support the Constitution and then engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or gave aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Section 3 also included a provision that Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each House, remove such disability. It was a straightforward clause, and it's been applied throughout American history, although rarely and never involving a president of the United States. Now, Section 5 of the 14th Amendment, which we'll be talking about, says that Congress shall have power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article, unquote. I'll point out it doesn't say Congress must, it doesn't say Congress shall, and that'll come up later. So the Colorado Supreme Court did something that was straightforward. It was well documented, and that's the case that came before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Steve Rohde, on March 4th, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the Colorado decision. On its face, the decision was unanimous, but the court issued three different opinions. Can you explain what the court did and what we can learn from the different opinions?
This decision is a black mark on the U.S. Supreme Court and a stain on the U.S. Constitution. We can't be fooled by the fact that it was a unanimous opinion, and we'll discuss that in a moment. Five of the judges, part of the strong conservative majority, held that under the 14th Amendment, no state could disqualify a federal officer running, in this case, for election to the presidency. They threw in some history, some random quotes from some senators when the 14th Amendment was passed. They cited, of all things, a lower court opinion, which was not even a U.S. Supreme Court opinion, and they came to that conclusion. They swept aside the entire analysis of the Colorado Supreme Court, and they swept aside the very text of the Supreme Court, of the Constitution, I should say. And time permitting, we may talk about originalism and textualism. Here is the text of the Constitution. Now, what they did to get there is they tortured Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. They said that Congress must enact legislation to enforce Section 3. The problem is that Section 5 applies to the entire 14th Amendment. It applies in particular to Section 1, which guarantees due process of law and equal protection. It has never been held that Congress must pass new laws every time the law is to enforce due process and equal protection of the laws. Now, it was very unfortunate that the three liberal justices, Justice Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, concurred in the top-level decision reversing the Colorado Supreme Court. It's hard to explain why they did that. I think they were looking for uniformity. They were looking to introduce some quiet into the political atmosphere, but it was a huge mistake, and Amy Coney Barrett issued a separate concurrence. What they did there is the liberals did complain against the majority for overreaching. They could have decided the case that no state can disqualify a person running for office. That itself is a flawed analysis. But the liberals complained that instead, the majority went far beyond that. They said that no federal officer could be disqualified in the federal system. So no one could sue in federal court over this issue. Or on January 6th, the electors could not be rejected in Congress next year because Trump engaged in an insurrection. So this is a dark day for the court. They gave in to a Trumpian desire. It is possible that a Congress armed with a supermajority will in the future pass a law that would affect Donald Trump if he ever tries to run for president again. But the case, it shows arrogance on the part of the entire court. I think it'll go down in history, ironically, along with Bush v. Gore, involving a presidential election, as one of the most shameful decisions in the court's history.
In the criminal case pending against Trump in Washington, D.C., he and his lawyers are claiming that as a sitting president, he had absolute immunity from any criminal charges arising out of his official duties. But on February 6th, the D.C. Circuit Court rejected that argument. Now the Supreme Court has set oral argument for the week of April 22nd. How do you interpret what the High Court is doing, and what does it portend for the future of the criminal prosecutions against Trump?
This is another case which plays out my theme today. The court has set that argument for April 25th specifically. This came up through the court system with lower court decisions that held that Donald Trump and no president has absolute immunity for crimes committed during their official conduct. The D.C. Circuit, not prone to be a liberal court or otherwise, it is viewed as a conservative court, wrote an extensive opinion explaining why a sitting president cannot and does not have immunity from crimes committed while in office. It was a clear opinion, and the Supreme Court had several options. It could simply have denied review. Many times where a lower court has written an extensive, fully briefed, and fully authenticated opinion, the Supreme Court lets it rest right there. They could have set oral argument immediately after the Court of Appeals made its decision in February. They didn't do that. They kicked the can down the road and set oral argument on the very immunity claim for April 25. It's likely this case will be argued, and it may not be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court until June, when many of its decisions come out. Jack Smith is trying to get this case to trial before then. I do expect the court, possibly by another unanimous opinion, to agree that no president has absolute immunity for crimes committed while in office. They may come to that with different theories and different opinions. I think there's a strong chance, certainly, that at least five justices and maybe nine justices will deny absolute immunity to Trump in this case. But what I fear is we have the tyranny of delay. We have the assistance in Trump's campaign to get him past the election in November, that we will not, even if they decide the case in June, that Jack Smith cannot mount and fully have heard and decided his case by November, in which case we will be going out to election with these charges pending, not to mention the other criminal charges elsewhere. To some extent, that will give the American people a decision. Do they want a lawbreaker and an insurrectionist elected in November, or do they want to reelect Joe Biden? The fear is that if by some circumstance of the Electoral College, the weighing in of third-party candidates, Trump gets elected. He can instruct his Justice Department to dismiss all criminal charges against himself, and we will be launched into a constitutional crisis like we've never seen. The court should have done this quickly. Jack Smith took the extraordinary step of asking the court months ago to rule on immunity, and they denied that request. They heard Bush v. Gore within days after the Florida courts heard that case. They heard the Pentagon Papers within weeks of that case coming to them. Instead, they are slow killing this case, and that's the part of this that poses such a danger to our democracy.
This is Attorney Michael Smith here at Law and Disorder Radio. I'm with my co-host, Attorney Maria Hall, and we're speaking with Steve Rohde, the constitutional scholar. Steve, following the insurrection on January 6th, several social media platforms suspended Trump's accounts. Twitter said, quote, "After close review of recent tweets from the @RealDonaldTrump account and the context around them, we have permanently suspended the account due to the risk of further incitement to violence," end quote. In response, Florida passed a law to prevent social media from banning public figures like Donald Trump. Texas passed a similar law preventing platforms from removing content based on viewpoint. But then social media platforms challenged the laws, arguing that the laws violated their free speech laws, including the power not to publish content that they believed is dangerous. 2 weeks ago, on February 26, the U.S. Supreme Court heard 4 hours of oral argument on whether the social media companies have free speech rights, and if so, whether the Florida and Texas laws violate those rights. Steve Rohde, please tell us, if you will, how the dispute reached the Supreme Court. Who are the parties, and what issues did the justices agree to decide?
So let's set the stage here. It's very important to know that the First Amendment prevents government from censoring free speech, from writing laws that dictate what people can and cannot say. There are some exceptions to that, which we'll discuss on another occasion. But the First Amendment applies to government. Social media sites are private entities. They are private, such as newspapers and book publishers and others are private. Social media sites have set terms of service and community standards, which every user agrees to when they sign on. And under those community standards, social media sites decide if certain material is offensive, if certain material is incitement to crime. And that's what these sites did after January 6th. They made the lawful, constitutionally protected decision to remove Trump and other insurrectionists from their sites, and they had a lawful right to do that. Instead, Texas and Florida, under the control of Republican governors and Republican legislatures, passed laws. In Texas, they passed HB 20, which purports to prohibit large social media platforms from restricting, they call it censoring, speech based on the viewpoint of the speaker. One section prohibits viewpoint-based censorship, and another section requires platforms to disclose how they moderate and promote content and to publish, quote, acceptable use policies and maintain a complaint and appeal system. Florida, likewise, passed a law which prohibited deplatforming of political candidates and requiring disclosure of the reasons for the deplatforming. Now, in the case of those decisions, they went up through the courts. Eventually, the federal courts of appeal had split decisions, one upholding the law, one denying the law, and that came before the United States Supreme Court to argue those cases. And that's where the cases stand at the time of the oral argument.
Well, on February 26th, the Supreme Court heard those oral arguments, didn't they? 4 hours of them. Please summarize the key points made by each side.
Well, this was set against some really settled law about what private parties can do with their publications. One of the most important cases is a case called Miami Herald versus Tornillo, decided in 1974. There, a Florida law required newspapers to offer equal space to political candidates who wish to respond to election-related editorials or endorsements. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously struck down that law. It said Florida can't tell newspapers what to print on their pages. That's an editorial decision. The law would be an intrusion into the function of editors and the exercise of editorial control and judgment. There's a second case that was argued called Hurley versus Irish American Gay, Lesbian, and Bisexual Group of Boston. There was the classic St. Patrick's Day parade down the streets of Boston, but the court held that it was a private event, and the organizers of the St. Patrick's Day parade had the right to decide who would participate in the parade, what floats, what bands, what dignitaries, and what individuals. Now, sometimes the First Amendment is a bitter pill. In this case, I remember this decision coming out in 1995. It was very upsetting that the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously, again, with liberals and conservatives, would allow the exclusion of an LGBT group from a parade. But the question under the First Amendment is always the principle at stake. Could we force people to include speech that they disagree with in their own private publications? And that's what was argued before the court. The lawyers against the Texas and Florida laws pointed out that private parties every day make editorial decisions. Bookstores choose what books to sell and display. Museums, what art to display. Theaters, what plays and movies to show. Art galleries, what art to show. And concert halls, what music to display. If we go down the road that any state could pass a law dictating what content such facilities or publications or newspapers or magazines could publish, that's a very dangerous time. Therefore, the argument went in favor, by most accounts, to the First Amendment views in the case. I think the court has several options now when it considers the case.
Attorney Steve Rohde, what are the possible outcomes here? In other words, what would it mean if the court upheld the Florida and Texas laws? Or on the other hand, what would it mean if the laws were held unconstitutional?
Actually, the court has some options. Two of the justices, Justice Alito and Kagan, suggested that the factual record was incomplete, that perhaps they should remand the case to the lower courts. That, I don't think, will carry the day. I think this is a full record. I think all of the issues are fully briefed and argued, and I think it invites a decision by the highest court. There was some suggestion by Justice Sotomayor and Justice Jackson. They were concerned about the question of discrimination. And I believe that if this case is decided in terms of striking down the Texas and Florida laws, there may be concurring opinions in which those justices and others may say, we fully agree sites can publish viewpoints that they endorse and or criticize, but they cannot discriminate with their users on the basis of race, religion, ethnicity, or gender. We may see those justices who are very concerned about this in light of the famous wedding cake, masterpiece wedding cake, which allowed private parties to discriminate against gay and lesbian couples, a case last term in which a website designer was allowed to discriminate over the objections of the liberal justices. I think they may take this occasion to reinforce that whatever the free speech rights are, that you cannot discriminate against your users on those grounds. Certainly, that's what I hope the court will decide.
Steve Rohde, this case highlights another issue, that is, how this Supreme Court interprets the Constitution. Some believe it should be interpreted as the original framers intended it in the 18th century, whereas others believe the Constitution is a living document that must adapt to our ever-changing world. Where do the justices stand, and how might their leanings impact future decisions?
This is a very important issue. This was the death knell to Roe v. Wade in the Dobbs decision a few years ago. There is a strong viewpoint which now prevails on the U.S. Supreme Court, which used to be a minority viewpoint. It's been promoted by Justice Clarence Thomas, by Neil Gorsuch, and others have picked up and use it when they want. And that's this notion of originalism or original text or textualism. It's a notion developed by Robert Bork and other conservatives through the Federalist Society and elsewhere that tries to freeze the U.S. Constitution in the 18th century, that tries to hold accountable any constitutional claim and to reject such a claim if it doesn't fit within the minds and values of the founders who wrote the Constitution and ratified it. As my biased description shows, I think it is an outmoded theory, and it is contrasted with the notion of the Constitution as a living document, that the document has broad terms, freedom of speech, due process, equal protection of the law, and that it grows and meets ever new invasions of those rights. There was no television at the time the First Amendment was adopted. There was no internet, but no one would pause and reject free speech for the internet and other forms of technology, television and radio that came later. Justice William Brennan Jr., my favorite justice, who I was privileged to meet in his chambers before he died, he nailed originalism. He said it is arrogance cloaked as humility. It's these conservative justices wringing their hands. Oh, we're sorry we can't vote in favor of civil rights and civil liberties. We're bound by the intent of the framers. That's the humility part, but it's all arrogance because they are furthering their own values. We're seeing this in this Supreme Court, but when it works for them, they will abandon originalism to come to their predetermined political decision to advance the agenda of the presidents who appointed them. And for three of them, that's Donald Trump. We're seeing that in this court. They cast aside originalism when they dealt with the 14th Amendment. We as voters and as participants in this democracy must be ever alert to the nature of this supermajority on the Supreme Court. And eventually, someone said, it's the Supreme Court, stupid. Presidents nominate Supreme Court justices and Senates confirm them. That's what's going to happen. There will be vacancies in the next presidential term and in future terms. and it is the president of the United States that will nominate those justices. And that should alert and wake up everybody who cares about our constitutional democracy.
Well, Steve Rohde, unfortunately, we've come to an end to our allotted time, but this has been a real privilege for Maria and I to be able to interview such an eloquent spokesperson for democracy, and we're really grateful that you're on the show. We were going to want you back. I don't think that the next few months are going to be great for us, and we need to talk to somebody like you about what's going to happen. Meanwhile, Steve Rohde, you take it easy.
Thank you.
Visit us online at lawanddisorder.org for archived programs and links to many of the issues we discuss.
88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh. Hey everybody, this is Peter, and it is time for the New and Newer Music Show. I play new music for you every Sunday night from 9 to 11. This week, lots of great stuff. New music from Still Corners, new music from The Smile, and new music from Torres. But let's start off with the newest from Ibibio Sound Machine, and they're a pretty awesome band. And this is the new single from the forthcoming album, Mama Says. This is Got to Be Who You Are.
From Super Lyric to Isaliko, Ikoi, and Yaba. Everybody, everywhere you go, got to be just who you are. Down in London to Africa, got to be just who you are. Everybody, everywhere you go, just be who you are. From Super Lyric to Isaliko.
Ella Hart, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Too late.